I hope so. I mean, yes, I think that. So welcome to the N+1 CSS Editor Workshop. So we have an exciting video of talks today and also some food entertainment on YouTube. So without further ado, let's start with Anupam Majumdar, who is going to talk about constraints and time scale, and Bobby from the project.
Hi, guys. So okay, let me start the first talk today. So I'll be talking about cosmological constraint spring scale and coupling from Gaussian. And actually it's based on a couple of papers which I've written with two of my postdocs, Asko Jokinen and Chinmay Muthamathi. And Antti Vahikonen is a grad student, and Kari and Christ. Well, the essential physics is there in the first paper, but most of the results I would quote from the last paper. Okay. Okay, let's do a very simple, let's imagine that we are doing a very simple experiment. We just want to, bang electron and positron in a flat space. Now, what would you expect? You would expect the electrons to be banged, you release some energy. Now, if you want to perform the same experiment in a... Now, here there is no gravity, as such. But if you want to involve gravity in this, you would expect something different. You would expect that, you should get some ripples in your space-time as well. And we want to do similar kind of experiments in a cosmological setup. That's the aim of, today's talk. And the question which you would ask, can you really excite from this kind of phenomena, can you really excite very long wavelength modes? So when I say very long wavelength modes, I mean modes of gravity. Essentially, I want to excite the perturbations in the gravitational sector from this kind of experiment. So one thing which we have to keep in mind that actually it's in our it works in our favor, because inflation, the unknown, is actually not only solves many problems, but actually it does something miraculous for us, that it makes the causal horizon much bigger than the Hubble radius. And sometimes people get confused with Hubble radius and Hubble horizon, but I'd like to speak with Hubble radius, because it makes things a lot clearer. Now, you certainly don't want to live in this kind of universe. It's very inhomogeneous, you have all sorts of patches, but what inflation does for you, that makes the universe perfect and homogeneous. So, can imagine that this is our Hubble patch, and there are many such Hubble patches within one, causal horizon. So this is what inflation does. Now, coming back to the same old experiment which I was talking about. Now let's imagine. So these are these same patches are the Hubble patches, the Hubble radius patches, and I want to repeat the same experiment. And I want to do it by hand. Let's do it by hand in every patches. So what I would expect? This is all I would expect, that things are happening simultaneously in all the Hubble patches. And the yellow one is my Gaussian horizon. So it's much, much bigger than my Hubble, one Hubble patch. And then I can ask sensible questions. Like if I want to understand some quantum mechanical phenomena or quantum field theory phenomena, I can study the two-point correlation functions, higher order correlation functions, and things like that. And it makes sense, because my project horizon is a lot bigger. And that's what exactly we do when we talk about CMB physics in cosmology. We want to understand the two-point correlation function of temperature, and we just take a two-point correlation function and, you know, on scales very large, larger than the size of the Hubble radius. Now, we would see in a minute that the same experiment, actually nature does it. Or when I say nature, I mean that, you know, in a cosmological context, it happens very naturally. There you don't have to put it by hand, but it would happen automatically. Now, with this introduction, let me start to a little bit versus string theory, because my goal is to understand these two aspects, string tension and the string coupling. And why do I need these things? At least I need the string coupling because I want to understand, at the end of the day, my standard model physics. That's the main goal. So let's see what are the constraints people have. I mean, you know, we know about these string couplings and string scale and the string coupling. Actually, we don't have any good constraint on the string coupling. Most of the cosmological constraints appear from, you know, on string scale. So from CMB, so if you have strings, they produce, two images, and from there, it's well-known, you know, result, you get the temperature fluctuations roughly of the order of 1 part in 10 raised to, in order to map the CMB constraints of 1 part in 10 raised to 5, you get a constraint roughly, the G Newton, the full dimensional Newton constant, and you the string tension, roughly 1,000 × 10⁶, and it has been refined very recently by Henry Tai and his collaborators, and Levon Poisson is as well as more involved in that in this game.
But that's main subject to do with fundamental strings.
No, sure, it has nothing to do with the fundamental strings. But the hope is that suppose if the fundamental strings is lying around, then we would expect similar kind of bounds. That's the hope. But it, as I've said, that it is true that it has got nothing to do with the fundamental strings, just mainly cosmic strings.
Does that mean that it has nothing to do with the fundamental strings?
Sorry?
Why do you say that it has nothing?
You will expect similar kind of bounds if fundamental strings do exist.
Well, because they just keep me leave with us. Yeah. Just to have the model which there is no remnants, no individual strings.
I mean, you may have, I mean, you know, some string, I mean, right. Like in our paper, what we discussed was that we might have secondary phase of inflation which might dilute completely the fundamental strings. So it might happen. And also, okay, so all these bounds, I mean, you know, thanks for that you pointed out that all these bounds are actually coming from cosmic strings. But we can apply these bounds if fundamental strings do, you know, hang around, then we can apply these bounds. So that's the kind of like, so it's a very indirect way of putting the bounds. So similar kind of bounds can be obtained from, because this cosmic strings also emit gravitons, gravitational waves, and the cusps and things like that. Now from there also you get some bounds, and these bounds are again, as I just mentioned here, they go like roughly 10⁻⁷ of that order. The G is again the Newtonian constant, and mu is the string tension. And this bound is well known from non-vector closings, this famous paper by Kasky, Teller, and Grava. And similar kind of bounds are also obtained in Velenkin and Shalal's book as well. And from gravitational lensing, I'm certainly not an expert, but again you get some bounds roughly of the order of, you know, similar kind of order as you can see. So what it actually points out that, you know, at least in the context of CMB, If you really fix all your dilatons and things like that, then what at the end of the day you get is the roughly this is the constraint from various observational science.
So
MS is this strings and M Planck my program.
So that's still maybe equal to Planck.
Sorry?
It's still maybe equal to Planck.
The strings, but yes. It could still be very close to M Planck, could be roughly of order 1 as well.
So there's an inequality there somewhere?
Sorry?
Is there an inequality there somewhere?
Okay, let's put it at less than equal to, with that.
Less than or equal.
So it just does not depend on the number of the density of strings in space, so you have to make some assumptions.
If you really want to prove some properties, like if you want to say that whether these strings are coming from cosmic strings, from physical strings, or fundamental strings, then you have to look into their properties and their number densities and things like that. Because depending on the phase transition, they can use different predictions for their number density of strings and defects. So then, if you really want to refine your prediction, you want to say that all these things that you see here coming from the strings, then you have to work really hard.
So I can understand how you can sort of roughly estimate the number of density of strings for
logical
text, but what about fundamentals?
Sure. No, it's not there at all. Especially for, say for instance, for CMB, you assume that, we know that if there are too many strings, then, the strings cannot really explain this Sackville's effect, one part of the tenders to five. But even it can explain, you cannot really explain the rigors. So the assumption goes in that at least you have roughly less than 10% of matter may contain strings, because strings also produce isocurvature fluctuations, and from there you can put constraints on the number density and energy density of the strings.
Yeah. What you're saying, if you are very optimistic and say mm-hmm. that your cosmic strings are in fact fundamental strings,
I just want to point out the very first value that you obtained there is not obtained from the signature that cosmic streams live in the CMB. So the first value, mm-hmm. the very first one at the top, is obtained from the fact that the inflationary scale, the Hubble constant during inflation, is related to the brain tension.
Sure,
but
they're all connected. But they're all connected because if the strings there.
And I just want to say that the fundamental string scale also gives the cosmic string scale, so that's how I would play the first one. The other ones I was saying from observation.
Sure, but even, I think this paper by Tai et al., what they considered was they assumed that there's some amount of strings hanging around, and you can put the bound of the set that the strings give rise to isocurvature fluctuations. And you have some constraint on isocurvature fluctuations. And that was the paper by Bokshoyan and Tai. And this other author, I've forgotten. So there are three. So from there you get the constraint on this. And it also depends on how many, I've taken the optimistic value that I allow 10% of the total energy density in the form of stress.
But conclusion is the very first one, you can obtain the constraint even.
You can! So there are ways, yeah, sure. Yeah. So that I agree with you. Okay. Now, coming back to a little bit on the string theory side, we all know that since it's intelligence institute, I don't really have to go into details of the string theory, but we know that strings are not alone in the world. We have stable D-brains, and we have unstable D-brains as well. Now, here comes the interesting thing, that no matter, the philosophy which I take that, the string theory is perfect, it would work perfectly in a perfect space-time supersymmetry, if you have perfect space-time supersymmetry. However, as soon as you break supersymmetry, and that has to be broken at some point or other in the, in the early phase of the universe, you would end up with some kind of unstable situation, like unstable D-brains, or some kind of non-degrees kind of brain solutions. And that would immediately give rise to some tachyonic instability. And today my focus will be on this tachyonic instability, and I'll try to convince you that this tachyonic phase can give rise to some information about some properties of string theory. Now one example is my DP-DP brain. They are static objects, there's no interaction between them, and they're stable configuration. On the other hand, the example which I gave you, the first example of electron-neutron banding, this is what's happening in, from high-dimensional point of view, my brains are almost like point objects, and if I bang them, it's nothing but my electron-positron banding. And this system is unstable, and this gives rise to, energy release, but as we know, that when the brains come very close to each other, roughly of the order of string scale, the way it releases its energy in terms of, you can describe it by collective open string degrees of freedom, and that's called, in Sain's language, it's a tachyon Robin or the tachyon, open string tachyon is common. And so this is a picture which actually people use very often in inflation. It's a very nice realization of hybrid inflation model by many people, Dai, Diwali, Burgess, and again Time. There are many others which I have not included here. So the idea is that the inflaton is my brain entanglement separation in this direction, and at some point we have the tachyon, tachyonic instability is triggered, and that ends inflation. Now, let's do the same experiment. Well, now we don't have to do the same experiment, actually, in nature does it for you. So let's imagine after inflation, you have these purple patches. These are Hubble radius patches. And what happens is that when the tachyon rocks, this is happy smiling face, as it starts rolling down, you have some, the event of rolling down is taking place in all these Hubble patches, simultaneously. And it's happening almost homogeneously. So similar experiment, I was thinking of before, I don't have to really do it by hand, but it happens automatically in any phase after, even after inflation. And now to be more precise, what I want to study is the correlation in temperature. So I'm interested in, say, what is a two-point correlation function or three-point correlation function in order to study this behavior. That's it. But we all know that gravity, when it comes to gravity, it is quite subtle. What we see actually in the sky right now is, this is the WMAP from the WMAP team. And what we find is that it gives very good handle on our linear, temperature and mass property, which is roughly 1 part in 10^5. And we can derive this picture very easily from the linear theory of gravity. There's nothing wrong in that. So you might ask, why go beyond this linear theory? Why go beyond this two-point correlation function? So my answer for this is that linear theory actually cannot really capture the experiment which I was suggesting. Because what I was suggesting is that things are happening in one Hubble radius, and I want to see its effect on very, very large scales, on scales larger than the size of the Hubble radius. So there has to be mode coupling. And that cannot be captured by just mere linear perturbation. And so you have to go beyond the linear theory. Now there's a whole lot of machinery going inside this studying this theory beyond linear theory, and I will not go into the details today, just because of lack of time. So what I will do is I will just simply mention some of the key formulas which people use, and I will also refer to a very nice review article which you can look into if you are interested. So what you are after here is that you want to calculate this quantity very quickly. This quantity, you have to expand higher order, and at the end of the day you would like to calculate this quantity which is defined as f of Mel, which is defined as by this way, by calculating this three-point correlation function. Now if this coefficient f of Mel is of order 1, or greater than 1, then you would expect that this nonlinearity is playing some important role. And this is what we will study today in this context. Now again, very briefly, because when I'm saying that I'm going beyond this two-point correlation function, so in the modern parlance, what people say is that we are studying the non-Gaussianity. Now, the very simple difference between Gaussian and non-Gaussian is that Gaussian theory is a free field theory. And a very good example is actually inflationary models. You take a simple model of inflation, m squared pi squared lambda pi for theory, and you immediately find that in order to get the right amplitude of the spectrum, and the tilt in the power spectrum, the quantity lambda, the self-interacting term, comes out to be very, very small. So if you really want to keep the success of inflation, inflationary theory is almost behaves like a free field theory. It's not quite, but it's almost. And you can calculate this quantity f of Mel And many people, including string theorists like Juan Maldacena and others, are also involved in this game. And the results will be very simply explained or written in terms of the two slow roll parameters, epsilon and eta. You might have seen in many places these slow roll parameters people use in the context of inflation. And since in order to be the size of inflation, you require these quantities to be less than one. So no matter whatever you do, you always get this quantity f of L less than one in the inflationary context. And so the punchline is that somehow you have to study the interacting theory in order to understand, or in order to get some appreciable non-Gaussianity. And the interaction comes actually after inflation, because no matter what happens during inflation, you need to excite your Stanmore degrees of freedom after inflation. And there comes the interaction between the inflaton sector and the rest of the sectors. So you can see that the way I'm going, which direction I'm going for. So I'm looking for some interactions, and so here, in this simple brain anti-brain models, I'm looking for some excitation of tachyonic modes. So this is a simple potential, and for simplicity, I've just taken the tachyon action in the bosonic sector, so not in the supersymmetric sector, just to illustrate it, and. So this is a happy smiling face, this is my tachyon, and it's going to roll down. And as it's rolling, actually creates fluctuations. And these fluctuations are actually super Hubble radius fluctuations. And it's been very well studied by Lev and his collaborators, not only in one, but many papers. So the idea, key idea is that you have fluctuations in the tachyonic direction during inflation itself. And you need that. And so when the brains are separated, the tachyon is heavy, but as the brains come close to each other, the mass of the tachyon changes from, say, zero to negative, mass square changes from zero to negative. And during this process, during inflation itself, towards the end of inflation, creates fluctuation roughly of the order of ket, which I've written down over here. And that fluctuation is actually now amplified as the tachyon is drawing down. So you can calculate various quantities, such as number density of these tachyonic modes. They go exponentially, and the energy densities. And the important thing to note here is that the time span of this tachyon, it's really exciting the particles, is much, much shorter, much, much smaller than one Hubble time. So you can approximate this problem almost without taking into account of effect of expansion. So now I'm going towards understanding this quantity f of Nell in this kind of setup. Now, so just bear with me, these are just some expressions which again I'm going to reply with. You have to fix the gauge because you want to do these things in the cosmological context. But what you're after is this quantity, and this is constrained by the WMAP team, roughly. Right now it's very, very weak constraint, but nevertheless there exists some constraint. And the hope is that in future, we hopefully will be able to improve it. Now, how much? We don't know. How far? Okay. So I want to understand the fluctuations in the metric, as I said. So I have perturbed the matter. So what I showed that when the tachyon is drawing, I'm perturbing the matter. And I want to understand the linear fluctuations, phi prime, in the metric side. So this is my metric fluctuations. In order to define this FNL, you can use a particular gauge. And that's what we generalize linear gauge, dimensional gauge. And I don't want to go into the details here. And similarly, you can study the second, in order to study the higher order perturbation, as I mentioned, you have to study the second order metric fluctuations. And so now you see that in second order metric fluctuations, you have source term from the inflaton sector, because you also have to take into account the inflaton fluctuations, and also from the tachyonic sector when the tachyon is falling down. And the fluctuations in the tachyon sector exceeds that of inflaton sector. during the run of tachyon, and you can see that here the tachyon fluctuations arises, and these are the metric fluctuations which you want to which is there during inflation, which you at the end of the day would like to amplify. Now coming back to the results. So in the long wavelength regime, as I said from the beginning, that I want to understand what's happening on very, very large scales. I can look into, I'm just showing you the equation, but let me go into the plots. So the key thing here is that in the first order metric perturbations actually simplifies quite a lot. As I mentioned that since the tachyon is drawing down, it's drawing down in a time scale which is very short, and you can neglect the expansion of the universe during this period. So one of the solutions which you can construct from here is the constant solution, which was there from the inflation. And you can calculate the second order metric fluctuations. But at the end of the day, what you get is quantity f of n. And you get that what you find here is that the region below this curve is actually allowed, and the region above this line is actually ruled out. And from here, you immediately get a constraint on string scale. You just get a constraint on string scale, and you don't get, here you have to impose a constraint on string coupling, so you don't get directly any information about the string coupling. This, however, does not improve the bound too much. It's just one order of magnitude. But I'm still playing with the current bound on FNL. Now, if it improves, hopefully we will be able to improve this bound on the string scale as well.
How sensitive is it to G sub s?
I don't have the expression here for FNL, but okay. The thing is, becomes what happens is that you decrease G of s. Then what happens is that you store lots of more. The energy density. You excite more and more quanta actually. And so as a consequence, I would expect that you would enhance f of net. So you might be able to put stringent bounds on the string scale. In the other limiting case. Now, as I said, that I'm just playing with the same. First order linear perturbations, and if I take the other solution, which is my growing solution, then I can again calculate my second order metric fluctuation by feeding in here. And what I find this result is much more entertaining and much more, it puts much more constraint, because what I've done here is that I've plotted a control plot for the present constraint of FNL, which is. In fact, in our case, we can actually calculate the sign, so it turns out a negative, so we are putting the negative constraints in the negative side. And these are the constraints, hopefully, if we are able to improve the bounds on FNL. This is the allowed region, and if I impose this, okay, so the bound which I get from here, if I take this ms over m times roughly 1 part in 10 raised to 3, I get a spring coupling bound roughly 1 part in 10 raised to 8. However, the interesting thing is that in future, hopefully, if we improve the bounds on FNL, then we would be actually in this region, in this control, for FNL of minus 20 and FNL of minus 10, I would be in this small control. But as you can see, that if I want to satisfy my constraint, I'm naturally pushing my string scale higher and higher. And here comes the danger, because if I increase the string scale, what happens is that I also increase my the temperature and isotropy in the shacks for essentially I enhance delta T over T. And that's going to be ruled out just because you're going to produce too much anisotropy. So I think this kind of exercise is quite interesting, because as you can see that it can put some interesting constraints on some of my string properties, and there is a possibility that we might be able to put more constraints on our brain anti-brain kind of simple inflation model, which we use quite often in the string theory.
Thank you.
analysis, you could have just said, I'm doing hybrid inflation and I'm doing extremes of the parameters.
Yeah.
So my understanding is that MS then is the scale of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Where did GS, where was that? What was the essential thing that GS?
Okay, so that's a very interesting question. Usually when you do this calculation for just first order, you know, if I want to understand delta T over T, in either in hybrid inflation model or in green anti-brain inflation model, the input from, I mean, the GS doesn't really come in. And you can naively understand, because again, I'm doing the linear theory, and I'm assuming that I'm giving inflation math theory is almost interaction free. So the information about the string fluxing also doesn't really enter into my first order, when I do the first order calculation. However, when I do the second order calculation, the string fluxing arises automatically. The information is there very much when you do the higher order corrections. So it's a very nice way of explaining things. But you are absolutely correct that even you would be able to put constraints on hybrid models like hyperinflation, but in the context of hyperinflation, we often play with parameters which are, you know, which we can tune it. Because as such, we don't come from any theory as such. We can tune the scale of inflation, and we can also tune the coupling, because those couplings don't have much relevance. But in the string theory context, the constraint on the string coupling becomes relevant. Or any constraint we can, you know, impose can become relevant.
You assume that your Clairvoyant field T has scale of the spectrum of fluctuations.
I assume that here in this context.
I challenge this.
Okay.
The reason is, in the hyperinflation, if you take hyperinflation, what happens? We call it in this case the kick sector, it's a perpendicular direction to the input point. Mm-hmm. During inflation, this sector is very massive, and there are no fluctuations in this mode, not at all. Now, and therefore, they don't have scale-free spectrum of fluctuations. When technologic instability triggers, you have exponential growth, but the spectrum is not scale-free. Spectrum is suppressed on large scales, and therefore, there will be no contribution to long wavelengths from this set. Now, if you think about string theory calculus, snap, right? You draw the picture with the flat potential over there. And you think, because it's flat potential, fluctuations are generated. But this picture is true only when brain and anti-brain come to top of each other. Mm-hmm. When they are not on top of each other, right? Just to say, approaching each other. This mode is not light. It has no technology shirt. So therefore, I challenge this piece.
Okay, so the way I've proceeded here, as you explained, that obviously when the brain and tachyon, they are far apart, they're massive. And the tachyon is massive, there's no doubt about it.
It's called but tachyon, it's an open string mode.
Sure, sorry. Sure, I'm abusing the language here.
Yeah. So we might as well use the right language.
No, sure, I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely agree with
brains,
you.
Brains, antigens, stings.
Sure. I'm not a string theorist, unfortunately, I'm sorry. But I'm interested in string theory.
No. I am, so I can't help.
No, I understand you. What I want to say here is that certainly the PUT, if I want to just say, is massive here. When brains and anti-brains are far apart. But what I'm imagining that as they're coming close to each other, towards the end of inflation, if I can excite this tachyonic mode, I'm hoping that I will be able to amplify it. So you're absolutely correct. I need to have some time span. In some sense, what I can imagine is that when they're coming close to each other, that you still have one Hubble time, or roughly two or three Hubble times, where you can excite it. But if it happens just straightforward, you don't get enough chance to generate these fluctuations. Then I absolutely agree that.
To be met response to 65 or 55 or something.
Sure. I absolutely agree with you. So here, in some sense, the assumption I'm taking is that I absolutely agree with you that the brains are coming fairly slowly, and then I might be able to excise it. So I absolutely agree with you that I'm assuming that there is some fluctuation. And without that, I won't be. But in reality, I don't know. So again, if I trust this calculation, I get some constraint. I may not have to trust it. But that would depend very much on kind of model you choose.
So the bottom, if I was just doing hybrid inflation, you're saying for a generic situation, I wouldn't see this effect. But in some sense, to get string theory to give us a reasonable inflationary scenario, we know that we have to fine tune things.
No, you have flat direction during the
right.
You do have everything from this sector. And you have usual scale free fluctuations and usual very small non Gaussianity due to the very small fluctuation of all the same.
Right, okay. So the kind of the fine tuning there that we do to make a flat potential, that's not going to help.
No, because he's working in perpendicular direction.
And the equation that we put for the second order perturbation of the metric had a non-local term. Mm-hmm. I was wondering what does that mean?
That's a good question. We don't know how to deal with this non-local term. It's kind of like an artifact which arises when you know, because here we are neglecting when I do this calculation, I've neglected the fluctuations coming from the tensor modes and the vector modes. But I still want the scalar fluctuations coming from those, you know, some combination of the tensor modes and the vector modes by taking divergences and things like that. So when you do those operations, you get these non-local terms. Now, one approach which even is quite well known for is in the separate universe approach, where you can neglect those non-local terms. Then in that approach, these non-local terms do not arise. And recently there were some papers by David Light and his collaborators.
Okay, so let's thank Anupam again. Okay,
so, we'll